Well, hello, and welcome to our final Christmas hymn conversation for the year 2023. And we are ending this year's series on an incredibly high note. Michael and I sit down with J.P. Donnellan. Now, a lot of you maybe don't know who J.P. is, but you've definitely seen him. On a Sunday, there's usually a guy behind Michael playing guitar, talking into a microphone that you can't hear, surrounded by a lot of equipment. That is JP. He is a professional musician who blesses us at Coastline with his musical talent. So we get to hear a little bit about his upbringing, how he got involved at Coastline, his connection to the rapper T-Pain. And then we have a really fun game where we listen to some Christmas songs that could be considered Christmas songs or considered not to be Christmas songs. And we discuss what makes a Christmas song a Christmas song. It's a really fun time. But then we transition into our final hymn of the year, which is the song, What Child Is This? We again get into the history, we get into the composition, we get into the music theory behind the song and discuss what it means for us as Christians in 2023. So thank you so much for listening to this year's installment of our Christmas hymn conversation. And if you are disappointed that this might be the last year, well, you maybe want to look under your tree or your podcast feed on Christmas morning for a little bit of a surprise. But until then, we'll see you next week and every single week after that. Hello and welcome. Very special episode of the Coastline Covenant podcast. Rounding the corner on our Christmas hymns conversation. Michael, usually we rename the podcast for the Christmas season. We did not do that this year.
No, it's just the Coastline Covenant Christmas
experience.
Extravaganza.
Experience extravaganza. I will say, just before we get started with our guest, I have heard the people crying in the streets
about our thoughts
on a particular Christmas song called Away in a Manger. I never re-listened to the podcast, but this morning I walked my dog and I re-listened to the podcast. And I just want to go on the record and say, we were not harsh at all. I don't know if it was a couple weeks ago we recorded it, so it might be a little bit foggy in your memory, but I cannot really back that we were critical. I can say that we were probably maybe a little harsh, but not overly critical. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I listened back to it 2 days ago as well on double speed.
I can't imagine. That sounds horrible.
But I did. And I don't know. I had heard the crying in the streets as well. So I was, you know, ready to go, okay, I need to go on a self-reflective journey. How mean was I about this?
Yeah.
And I think I hold to what I said.
Yeah, we hold to that. It's just a fine song. And I don't think we said we hate it. We said
no. It's
not going to make the Christmas Eve set list, but it's not going to make like the trash pile.
Yeah, and it would likely make its way into a Christmas.
If Advent was 20 weeks, you'd play it.
I might play it next year. I might play it this year. Who knows? Maybe this week.
Maybe this week. Well, I think this episode comes out the week of Christmas Eve, so I would doubt it, unless you know.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
We record these a little in advance, and so sometimes we try to do a little soothsaying, and it's really hard because we don't know what's coming. I think that's coming. But speaking of what we have in front of us today, that's not the transition I was looking for. I'm so excited. This has been the episode, I think, I've been looking forward to in a very unique way, because we talk to so many people on the podcast, pastors, we talk to professors, we talk to congregants, but we very rarely talk to somebody who is so seen and visible at Coastline, but you never ever hear from, unless you have in your monitors and you are playing in the band on a Sunday morning, because this man, you'll hear a lot. And he is generally shouting out numbers, right? Am I off yet? It's a 1, 5, 4, 6, never higher than 8.
Yep.
But it's usually a number. He has, Michael, really quick, before we introduce our guest, what kind of impact has this person made on the Coastline worship experience? I'm interested because he wasn't there in the beginning and now he's come into our lives and he has enhanced our experience, I would say, but you work with him the most closely. How would you say this guest, who will remain unnamed until we introduce him, how has he impacted the Coastline worship experience?
This person has impacted the Coastline worship extravaganza a lot. In fact, I would say that I would solely attribute our excellence level to this person. So he has very, very greatly blessed our community. Mm-hmm. And it was actually funny because the story goes that he walked in one night because he's a friend of our friend, Rachel Gonzalez. And Rachel was supposed to be leading worship. and Rachel got sick literally the last minute, and I was sick. But then what happened was I had to come lead because Rachel was sick.
I remember this.
She was supposed to be leading for me. So I came in and made it happen. So he shows up and he's sitting, out in the congregation, and he's like, comes up to me. Hey, man, that was great tonight. That was great. Hey, where's Rachel?
You're not Rachel. And honestly, I tell you that every week.
Yeah.
Every time you sing, I'm like, but you're not Rachel.
I mean, listen, dude, I know that every day of my life. I feel that in my bones. Anyway, so then the next week he just shows up like, hey, I kind of like that. I think I'll show up again. And then the next week after that, hey, I'm back. So this is back when we were having night services. So this has been a while now.
Yeah, it's been a bit. And so, Michael, why don't you introduce our guest since you have this story. I would love to hear how you would introduce him. Like, pretend he's coming out on a talk show. What would you say?
This is what I would say. This guest is a very, very interesting person. This person has met and may even be friends with T-Pain.
Wow.
This person is probably one of the best musicians I know and is without a doubt the best guitarist that I know. And the best guitarist I've probably ever played with. And he's just a gem of a human being.
Gem.
And he's blessed our community a ton.
He's an interesting gem.
This guest is the JP Donnellan, my friends.
JP, my guy. So happy to have you.
Hello.
T-Pain.
Yes.
What's T-Pain's, what's he like?
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's so cool.
He seems really rad.
I have nothing but good things to say about T-Pain.
When he speaks, he doesn't speak in auto-tune. He just speaks normal.
No, I actually, he has a, and maybe I'm outing him, but he has a party trick where he sings happy birthday, like if there's a birthday thing happening.
Yeah.
And he'll just, at the end of the song, he'll give you the most powerful, like operatic run at the end. Totally, no auto-tune, no nothing. The dude can sing so well.
Unsurprising.
Yeah.
He has a Tiny Desk, an NPR Tiny Desk.
He does.
And it's so good. He does not use auto-tune on it. It's phenomenal.
He's
phenomenal.
That was a very important video to me growing up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, speaking of growing up, this is a good segue. Where are you from? Who are you? Like, you're on the podcast. We've talked about you being a member, kind of involved with Coastline, but like, people might not know who you are. So tell us a little bit about your journey, where you're from, your background, maybe where you went to college. Michael says you're the best guitar player. Substantiate that a little bit. And then maybe that can connect you a little bit to what you do here at Coastline.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you the too long, didn't read, kind of shortened version.
Yes, yes.
Also, just before anything, I'm looking at this. Did you categorize these by color?
My wife did. My lovely wife, Megan.
Amazing.
Who never listens to the podcast.
It so makes me really happy shout out to look at it.
Hunter's anyway, books, by the way. That's what we're talking about.
I love it. But where I'm from. So I was born in Japan. Lived there for the first 3 years of my life. Moved to New York. Lived there for 9 years. And then when I was 12, I moved back to Japan, Tokyo specifically. And I guess like formative years, like 12 to 18, I was there. And I was kind of, because I'm a quarter Japanese, quarter Korean, quarter white guy.
And then the other one's a mystery.
Oh, sorry. Half white guy, quarter Japanese.
Got it.
I actually didn't know I was Korean for like a long time of my life. Cause there's like a racial thing happening there. So still I gotta learn Korean. I gotta go figure out that side of me. But anyway, that's a whole another tangent.
It's another podcast.
Grew up between Japan or Tokyo and New York. And I went to international school in Japan. So spoke English there kind of the whole time. I can speak Japanese, but I can't read or write, which is okay by me. You know,
yeah.
I get by enough. And then after that, I moved to Boston for school. I went to Berkeley. I went originally to be a guitarist, and then I got kind of like just playing guitar at school kind of felt lame, or not lame, but just like, I wasn't getting as much as I wanted. Also, I was a violinist my whole life before that.
Wow.
So like classical teachers have a really strict way of teaching. And then when I got to Berkeley and all the guitar teachers were like, do what you want. Yeah. Like hand position is whatever. Like it's cause that's just how guitar is.
Right.
It's like, it's kind of, you know, modern and new and everybody can do whatever they want. So I was kind of upset. I was like, there's like, where's the dude telling me like how to stand and like how to hold my shoulders?
What to wear even.
Yeah, straight up. So it felt weird. So instead of performance, I did jazz composition.
Oh.
Yeah, it was brutal. I like, it was self-inflicted pain. I don't know, it was crazy. So it was, anyway, after that, I did that. Boston was cool. Moved to Atlanta with my girlfriend, Piao, because she got a record deal that T-Pain signed for her, or not signed for her. She got a deal with T-Pain because T-Pain was starting an artist label, like a label under one of, I think it was Empire, like a distributor or something. Anyway, started that. And yeah, I ended up in Atlanta. And then 2 weeks later, the pandemic started.
Oh my gosh. So wow.
Yeah.
That's it. That, when any story can be told now and you just say, and then the pandemic, people go, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We all feel you, bro.
So
we
you
all
were, feel you. You were in Atlanta during the pandemic?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was there. It was, we moved there being, and I moved there. And when I first like hung out with like his family and everybody when we first got there, I remember I didn't even say I was a producer. I was just like, they were like, so what's your vibe? I was like, oh, I play guitar. That's my thing. That's what it was. I was just a guitarist. And then it was billed as she was going to go there and use a lot of the connections that he has to like make records. But then because of the pandemic, we couldn't get in with anybody. So that kind of started my writing music arc. Like
that arc.
Just being locked in the house and just like making beats, recording Piao, writing songs and sending them to T-Pain and him telling me like, nah, man, like,
that's so
like keep watch some more YouTube tutorials. And it was such good feedback that like I just did that every day for like a year and a half. And I remember the first time I sent a song to him and I got something back and he was like, this is really great. You're really on the right
track. You nailed it.
And I was like,
wow. On a Sunday, you maybe see him playing guitar. He has headphones on. He's in the back. You have like a whole rig. What are you doing? And like, talk a little bit about what that role is, and especially in terms of like feedback and group and collaboration, because it's really interesting.
Oh yeah, what's on the laptop that's always up there on the box? With
he's
the
just checking
stickers.
His stocks.
Yeah,
he's I'm on make Roblox. Sure.
Roblox, Minecraft.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Great. That's great.
No, it's I'm pretty much every Sunday there are tracks, and by tracks that either means that there's an accompanying like audio thing happening that can be heard in the house, or it's just a guide and a metronome that's being played. And we kind of, I feel like we're like 50-50 between the two. Some songs we feel like need a little bit of support. Some songs we can totally, they almost feel better just us doing them on our own. Mm-hmm. But pretty much what that computer is doing is there's a metronome, and every Sunday I wake up before church and I load up all the songs and I put them like in one Ableton session and I queue up and I have section markers that say like how long the verse is, how long the intro is, how long the chorus is. So if we're all up there and, you know, we haven't had enough coffee and there's a double chorus instead of a single chorus and I can kind of like sense that we're going back to the verse instead of a double chorus, you know, I'll be like, there's a double chorus, guys, like run it back, you know, keep going. So it's a lot of just kind of, for me also, it's also just kind of like the way that I came up as a guitarist there. I feel like when I started at school, it was no tracks. It was just regular music playing. Like the drummer keeps time and you kind of lock with the drummer. And then as I kind of left the school bubble and went into the world and saw how things are done, all shows everywhere use tracks and clicks and metronomes, just because shows these days, like you have video, you have pyro, you have lights, you have any number of things that need to be coordinated. And to not have like a master clock keeping it all together is just a recipe for disaster.
You lose it so fast.
Yeah. And it just makes things tighter. It also makes it so I feel like I've adopted the computer as my main instrument now, even though like I'm guitarist vibes. I don't know. I just feel like computer is my main thing now.
I play the computer.
Yeah.
It's like in Barbie when he's like, my job is beach.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My job is beach.
I play computer.
Yeah. But it opens the world to like the shows and like live to so many more creative things. And also just when we're up there playing, I feel like it's very freeing and you're kind of able to be a little bit more I don't know, giving of yourself to the music when everybody knows exactly what's happening. It's like, there's not like the drummer counting off and you're like, oh, is this going to be a 2-bar count or a 1-bar count? Like, you, it's just, there's somebody in the track saying intro 2, 3, yeah, yeah, four, yeah. And it starts right there. And whether you do it or not, everybody else is. So you better be there too. So
yeah, Michael, you've been leading worship for a long time. And JP even said it, like, this is a fairly new experience with like tracks and this thing. How, from your perspective, has it helped you as a worship leader?
Yeah, for me, the biggest help in it has been the speed at which we rehearse. That's been the biggest help. So if you just follow the computer lady, you know, if you follow where she's telling you to go.
And her name again was Patricia, I think you said?
I'm down with that name.
Patricia, Patty.
Patty, yeah, good old Patty. Patty helps us every weekend get where we need to go. So that being said, if you follow her, then you know, we'll all be together. So it helps that we can almost kind of pre-plan how that rehearsal is going to go so that we get through the rehearsal in an hour versus 2 hours. And and with our current sharing space situation with right. St. Andrews, we need a lot of things to kind of be pre-done so that they're preset and ready to go. So with our current situation, tracks have been honestly one of the only ways that we could actually make it work and still feel like we're walking out with some level of excellence. Excellence is not always the goal in worship. The goal is worship. The goal is like a heart experience. But I do believe that excellence contributes to our ability to worship, because without excellence, there's distraction.
Right.
And not only that, I think, you know, the Bible's clear that the temple musicians were skilled in their craft. So there's a certain element that the Lord is worthy of excellence. He's worthy of our best. And so as we come with excellence, it blesses the Lord. Not that he also doesn't accept us when we are weak and mess up, you know?
Well, thanks guys. I mean, that was a really fun rabbit hole that I enjoyed, and I hope people are still listening, because now let's talk about some Christmas songs. JP, what's your favorite Christmas song?
I prepared for this.
Thank you.
Because
finally.
I listened to the one with Rachel, and she had a great, I don't know exactly what she said, but she had a great answer. That doesn't sound very prepared, sorry. But
I prepared, I think.
But no, I kept coming back to this one piece that I had to check if it was a Christmas song, and I guess we're gonna be.
Yeah,
I'll be double checked by whatever we end up doing after this segment. But Arcangelo Corelli's Christmas Concerto.
Okay, that sounds like a Christmas song because the word Christmas is in the title.
And I don't know the exact. I don't know if it's orchestral, chamber. I don't know the exactly what. Way I played it in like a chamber music setting, but it's I don't know how many movements it is, but it's classical. It's kind of that dark sound that
I'll play a little bit in the background here.
Yeah, that's it. it's gorgeous. It's moody. I don't know exactly what makes it Christmas. Maybe they had to write it for like a service, and ended up being. But to me, it's a Christmas song because when I was in Japan, I was in a like a chamber music group on violin, and we played this one season. And I don't know, I have just a lot of good memories of playing, you know, this with my mom and my brother, and it was beautiful. So this is, to me, is like Christmas, like memories to me.
That's great.
You know what I love is I love that. I think for most of us, as like modern American listeners, for most of the people here, we think of Christmas songs as having to do with the like specific topic of Christmas time, whether that be the birth of Christ or just the experience of what it's like to be an American during December. But for you, your favorite Christmas song is more melodic.
Yeah.
It's a melody that comes around during this time of year that just kind of reminds you of Christmas. And I just find that so interesting. I find that really interesting that for you, it's it's not necessarily the content of the words. There are no words. It's the feeling that comes, the emotion that comes from those notes being put together.
Yeah. And I think that is a great transition into what I want to talk about right now, which is this idea that our Christmas songs, is that like it? You know, what I mean by that is like, there are definitely Christmas songs out there, but are there some Christmas songs, or some songs I should say, that are so ambiguous that they could be considered Christmas songs, although they are not Christmas songs? And this is all, the impetus of this was the New York Times has a biweekly segment called The Amplifier, where one of their music critics, Lindsay Zolads, just kind of poses a question and then puts a Spotify playlist out there to kind of either refute or defend or whatever. And this week it was 9 great tracks that might be Christmas songs. So they could be, they couldn't be, they have some sort of thing, some part of their DNA that maybe makes it sound like a Christmas song. So I'm going to play a couple of them live right here. You guys are going to listen to them, and we're going to discuss if they're a Christmas song or not. So the first one that she mentions is a beautiful song by the underground unknown musician Joni Mitchell, and the song is called River. Michael, have you heard the song before?
Don't think so.
You, JP, you're laughing.
I have not heard. I have a huge gap in my music knowledge. So I'm ready for this.
So I'm glad you guys have never heard this before. There are people listening to the podcast who are screaming at you guys. You've never listened to Joni Mitchell, who's one of my favorites ever. And B, because this song, the question of if it's a Christmas song or not, it will be answered almost instantaneously. So here we go. This is River by Joni Mitchell. So you don't need to adjust your Spotify. You are hearing an interpolation of Jingle Bells, but the song is not Jingle Bells.
It's coming on Christmas. They're cutting down trees. They're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river.
Okay, so I'll start turning it down. What do you guys think? Is this a Christmas song? Does this exist in the Christmas song lexicon?
I know, I get what you're alluding to, because it's, if I were the manager at a mall and it was Christmas time and I was in charge of putting the Christmas playlist together and an intern walked in and said, I have my favorite Christmas song ever. Can you please play it in the mall at some point during the season? It would make me so happy. A, I probably would, because it would, you know, it'd make them happy.
They'd be excited about it.
But I would definitely play it maybe like just once, because I wouldn't want whoever is in charge of the, like above me to like be like, that's not a Christmas. I feel like it doesn't fit corporate Christmas.
Yes. That's really well put. I completely agree. And Michael and I were talking about this in the Silent Night, or not the Silent Night, in the Way in Major episode, of like how some songs are meant to be sung corporately and some songs are meant to be just personal. And I'd say like, this is a personal Christmas song. And the subject matter, I mean, you guys should go listen to Joni Mitchell. She's wonderful. But the subject matter, it's sad. It's kind of a moody contemplative song, but using Jingle Bells as the melody is really funny. And even the first line is, it's coming on Christmas. So I would say it's a Christmas song. I think you're right. Like if you're going to be walking around the mall, you're like, I'm not going to buy anything. Christmas is sad.
I mean, it's interesting to me that it's a very meta Christmas song, because it's her talking about the season and the time of Christmas without talking about the birth of Christ really at all. So it's really interesting, like how Christmas has these layers, mm-hmm. like what the experience of what we would call something, what we Christians would call Christmas, is a very specific thing that has to do with the Lord of the universe coming down to earth, right? And being born. But for the rest of the world, there's a whole other layer of what Christmas is that is also for us too. I mean, there's also, we are living in the culture we live in, and there's trees and there's lights and there's, you know, jingle bells. So
yes.
I don't know. It's just really interesting how layered Christmas is, I guess.
So what is your answer then? Is it a Christmas song?
I would say yes.
I would say yes too. Okay. So next one is...
That's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, dude. I mean, that's a little plug for Joni Mitchell, who certainly doesn't need it.
Does she do Case of You?
She does do Case of You.
That's like one of my favorite all-time songs.
It's such a beautiful
song.
Yeah, actually, this is a side note. Michael has a dulcimer in his office, and she plays that song on a dulcimer.
You were showing me that.
Trying to figure it out the other day. Okay. So this next song is, again, is it a Christmas song or not? I will say it's in a Christmas movie. It's heavily featured in a Christmas movie. And so I think that's where the association goes, but we'll see what you guys think. This is Holiday Road by Lindsey Buckingham. Have you guys heard this song before?
I have, yeah.
So this song heavily featured in the film Christmas Vacation. So I think that's where the association goes, but also it's called Holiday Road.
Yeah.
So paired together. But I think my counterpoint would be no, not a Christmas song. No. Holiday Road, ambiguous. You could play it on Easter. You could play it on the 4th of July. I've never actually looked at the lyrics of the song. Maybe that would help me, but I don't know. JP, what are your thoughts here?
It does the...
Oh, no. It says Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. It's a... Eh, I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's... If... I feel like this mall test is just like going through my head. I'm so strong.
I mean, you're speaking to the right person.
I painted the picture too hard, but if... I feel like this kind of like rock piano kind of like... feels very like American station wagon Christmas to me.
I mean, literally the film Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, yeah. It's I feel like it's maybe I wouldn't put it there immediately, but the context that it has with the movie, I think it's valid.
Okay.
Is it adopted in?
I think so.
You put it in the lexicon?
It's in, and this is going back to what you said, Michael. It's corporate Christmassy. Not that corporate is bad. It's just it's that like that side of Christmas. It has nothing to do with what we Christians do for Christmas. And I guess you know, there's no you know birth of Christ. There's no any.
Yeah.
No, there's none. I just looked at the lyrics. There's no. It's about it. Literally, I think the song has 18 unique words. Holiday Road is repeated a billion times, basically.
I think it's a fun song. I think it can be used in a Christmas setting and have a fun, you know, be fun. We do that all the time where we play worship songs that aren't written as Christmas songs, but they're like Christmas adjacent. Yeah, I would say no. I don't think it's a Christmas song.
Okay, so no, that's a no from Michael. This next one is by Merle Haggard. It's a song called If We Make It Through December. Here we go. Play a little of it.
If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it
through December. So Merle Haggard, I mean, iconic country artist from days of yore, as we'd say. This song, the album it's on is an album called If We Make It Through December, and the cover is him standing in a field in the middle of wherever with just snow everywhere. So you get heavy holiday vibes. If We Make It Through December, the sentiment is one of, you know, Christmas is hard. The season is long. It is difficult. And that's why I don't know if it's necessarily a Christmas song in the sense where it's like celebratory or like, look at all the trees and the lights. I just think it's a incredibly relatable sentiment if we make it through December. So that's why I would say maybe it's a Christmas song in essence, but maybe not in form, if that makes sense.
This is making me question what counts as a Christmas song.
Exactly.
Whoever put this list together, who would put this list together?
This is New York Times.
Shout out New York Times writer.
Lindsay Zolads. She rocks.
This is an awesome list. I'm such a first impressions listener.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I feel like for me, yes, the sentiment of if we make it through December lyrically totally fits like the sea. Man, now I don't know what to think. I'm like,
back and forth.
Is it, yeah, it's,
I love it.
I'd say no, just because I'm just too first impressions based, and the first thing that I heard was like awesome country guitar.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. to me, I don't know. It's I'm too deep in the country world to even get it close to Christmas. I feel like I haven't heard a country Christmas. Maybe they exist. I just don't know. Oh yeah.
Taylor Swift has a country Christmas EP from like way back. Yeah. And there's actually a song on there, little plug for Taylor Swift's Christmas album. There's a song on there. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like overtly a Christian song. She's like, here's to the birthday boy that saved our lives. It's what is it called? I have to look it up. It's super funny.
I did not know it's she super had funny a Christmas to listen EP. To now. I need to listen to this.
The joke that I always ask is she going to re-record this one? I don't think she owns the rights to it. It's called the Taylor Swift Holiday Collection, and the song is called Christmas Must Be Something More. And the lyrics, I can remember them from my high school days of liking girls who loved Taylor Swift. And that was always like, I thought they would date me. Cause I'm like, I like Taylor Swift too. Now I think I like Taylor Swift more than anybody on planet Earth. But the lyrics are like, it seems that today holds something special, something holy, not superficial. Like here's to Jesus Christ who saved our lives. Like total overt Christian Christmas song.
See, I think that's what I'm like putting these songs up against is like it's jolly. There's Christ. There's snow. It's like a mix of both. It's not just like buy presents and eat cookies.
This
you know
is the Taylor Swift one. Here, I'll just fast forward to the chorus so you can hear it. This is the last chorus. Where
I feel like this might be my favorite T Swift era, like the country band. I don't know enough about T Swift.
It was a fun era.
It was
for sure.
So good.
Check it out. I mean, come on now.
We should play this.
Yeah, dude.
What are we doing?
Yeah, what are we doing? What are we doing? That's great. Okay, Michael, any thoughts on Merle Haggard before we play our last Christmas song?
My only thought is that he mentions Christmas a couple times. I have the lyrics up right here. He says, I wanted Christmas to be right for Daddy's girl. And then he has it again. Why Daddy can't afford no Christmas gift. So it's, again, Christmas adjacent, but I also think it's kind of more about December than it is about Christmas. So I'm saying no.
Yeah, because December's more than Christmas. There's New Year's there at the end. So, okay, here is our last one. And this one I would say is probably, to me, would be a no right out of the gate. I don't know if you guys have heard this song. It's by a band called The 1975, and the song is called Wintering. Said Alex is a sculptor and Olivia's been a vegan since 10. Well, Finn wears dresses while Debbie coalesces in a fleece that doesn't work. And I begin my chair to my mom cause her back hurts. I get home on the 23rd. So the reason that they consider this a Christmas song is because in the second verse, he talks about bumping into his family at a function and hanging out. And then the last verse is him saying like, I just came for the stuffing. I don't want to argue about nothing. I get home on the 23rd, which implies like coming home for Christmas. So what do you guys think? Coming home for Christmas, does that make it a Christmas song? It's a vibey song. I do love that song quite a bit.
I want to say I love the duo that we have of you being like very analytical like with the words
and me, and JP's just, like, and yes, me just being no, like yes like no.
Here's what I feel. The vibe is not Christmas. The vibe is Christmas. I think it's a I like the teamwork. There is nothing about that song that felt but put me in Christmas.
Right.
Not even like the you know. Driving my Subaru in Western Massachusetts, you know, past the ski resorts, like thing by myself.
That
you
doesn't
know?
Make you feel like Christmas.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't do the like the Joni Mitchell one
right.
with like the, you know, the acoustic kind of, you know, solitary internal Christmas. Like that was closer than this, I think.
Yeah. Michael, so. Thoughts?
This felt like a love song to me.
Oh, interesting.
Not one to Jesus. Like this was just like a song about a girl in and around Christmas.
In and around Christmas. All right, Christmas well, song. That's it. Those are some songs. The whole playlist is out there. You can listen to it. And also there's some really good non-Christmas Christmas songs in the world. And that just reminded me of it. So drop your favorites in the comments. But we are here to discuss actual Christmas song. So we're going to play it right now. We're going to give you guys a little break from us talking. This is What Child Is This? And this version is, what version did we choose, Michael, again?
The Chris Tomlin
version. Oh, yes. With All Sons and Daughters. That's right. Okay, so you are going to be hearing What Child Is This? And then we are going to talk about it. Michael, you have three children. At any point, have you ever held one of your children and said, "What child is this?"
Nope. Nope.
It's never happened.
I think they all are so distinct. I think I've known who they were every
Interestingly
time.
Enough, this whole song hinges on that one question. What child is this? Can you guys think of any other songs that are questions and answers? Where like part of the song is a question and the other part of the song is the answer? I'm sure there are some.
I feel like every good melody ever.
Oh, it's like a kind of a call and response type thing.
I'm giving away that I'm really not a lyrics person. I should be. I just like, for some reason, me and lyrics, I'm getting better at it, but it's like the last thing I listen to.
Michael, can you think of songs then that are lyrics or the lyrics that are questions and then answers? I'm Googling it. Songs that are questions.
I mean, the answers piece, I don't know, but I mean, I'm just thinking, what do you want from me?
Nice.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay, so I just Googled it. Songs that are 55 songs that ask a question in the title or lyrics. What's Up by Four Non Blondes? Where's My Mind by the Pixies? Have You Ever Seen the Rain by CCR? Now that that's probably my favorite one.
Oh, that's legit.
I love that song. What Are You Doing in My Life by Tom Petty? Don't You Want Me by the Human League? All right, so questions are a big part of songs. This one has probably one of the most fundamental questions in all of human history. What child is this? Which is not Mary being like, who is this baby? But it's mostly saying like, what is the implications of this child being born? Now, from a musical perspective, would you expect a song that answers such a monumental question to sound like this?
Huh.
For when it was written, yeah.
Okay. Mm. 1800s. Green sleeves.
That's good. I mean, it is really interesting to me how it like is oscillating between major and minor chords so much. It's during those first sections, it's so minor, and then this is Christ back to the major. So it definitely feels like very moody. It's a very moody song.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, I do feel like it musically is taking you somewhere for sure. Like you don't end up where you start.
You're on a journey a little bit. And the guy who wrote this song was on a journey of his own. His name is William Chatterton Dix. He wrote this song in 1865. It was set to the tune of Greensleeves, which we were talking before we started recording. Very famous melody. We didn't know there were lyrics. Again, someone's probably listening to this and yelling at us.
Was it written like 300 years before?
Like the 1500s. Yeah, it's an old, old song. It's a, what is it called, Michael? A broadside something or other?
It I don't remember what that the second word is. It's a broadside. So broadsides, it's actually super interesting. I didn't know what a broadside was before this song. A broadside was one of the first and most popular forms of printing. So before the when the printing press was really new, basically, you know, it was easiest to just get really cheap paper, and you would get these small little cheap pieces of paper, and you would stamp one page of lyrics, and or it would be music. Most commonly it was music. It was actually some kind of ballad that was printed on one sheet of paper. So, you know, we have our screens in church where you can look up and see the lyrics. They had a very cheap piece of paper with a stamp on it.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's so interesting that some of the first forms of printed print was these ballads.
Yeah, broadside ballad is what you were looking
at. Broadside ballad. Fit on the paper.
Yeah.
There's your, yeah.
So that's why it's shorter. Mm-hmm. It's only four stanzas. And I think it's really interesting, Michael, you kind of mentioned like when printing started, which is to indicate that this song is older, right? I said 1865 is when William Chatterton Dix, and I say his full name because Chatterton is an important piece of this story, which I'll get into in a second. But 6 years later, someone said it to Greensleeve. So it was a poem he had written, and he had written it after a series of illnesses, and he has, you know, been bedridden, and he's reading his Bible, and he kind of writes this hymn as a response to how he's been feeling, which is sad, lonely, desolate. Excuse me. And so it makes sense that this song would associate itself with the minor key, although he didn't give it music. Someone later put it to music. It was for a prestigious release in 1871 called Christmas Carols New and Old, which I guess was like the number one Christmas book at the time. So it was like a really big deal that his song got in there, and they associated it with such a popular song. They thought the song was going to have legs. But William Chatterton Dix, very interesting. His father was a guy named John, who on Wikipedia, John Dix or John Ross, which is his dad's name. This is verbatim the intro of his Wikipedia article. Quote, John Dix or John Ross was a British writer and a poet in Great Britain and America. Okay, so far so good. An alcoholic. He wrote noted biography of Thomas Chatterton, and he wrote In Our Own Dear Homes Again during the Civil War. I thought that was pretty brutal. I thought it was just pretty brutal to come out of the gate and be like, yo, this guy, alcoholic. Wikipedia. He's dead. He can't change that. No one's out here being like, John Ross, what are you going to do about Wikipedia calling you alcoholic? He can't do anything about
it. Shots fired.
Shots fired.
Enough people remembered him as drinking too much. So
yeah. Yeah. And he was a really interesting guy. The guy who wrote it, William, his dad, John, like I'm saying, was this guy who really loved this one poet in the 18th century named Thomas Chatterton. So Thomas Chatterton was a poet in the 18th century. He died by suicide when he was 17. At the age of 17, this guy had written tons of like political poems, tons of like treatises on what he thought like the government should look like, what he thought society should look like. And he wrote a lot of his work in the name of a guy named Thomas Rowley, who he made up as a 15th century monk. So this 17-year-old dude made up a character, wrote from the perspective of
his pseudonym.
It was his pseudonym, but he assumed this identity, and he just died by suicide. He drank a bunch of arsenic one day, and then boom, he died. And after he died, he got really, really popular. This guy, John Ross, John Dix, really likes him. So he names his son, his middle name after him, William Chatterton Dix. William Chatterton Dix, our guy who wrote this song, was not a Christian musician. He was not a priest. He was not a hymnal guy. He was an insurance agent at a maritime, maritime office in Glasgow. So he is like the farthest thing away from what we would normally expect, but he has this second life where he's writing all of these hymns, and he's really living out his faith in this way, and he dies, and that's it. And that is pretty much his story. So where Away in a Manger has kind of a mysterious, kind of shadowy, who wrote this, when did they write this, and why, this is really A to B to C to D. He has an interesting life, but he's doing something else with it. So I found that really interesting, especially with our conversation about creativity, where we all do things that are, you know, creative, but we all have other lives as well. And so I want to ask you guys this question. Like, you think about this guy in his maritime office, like he's just like adjusting boats, you know, oh man, I got to write this claim and I got to file this and go adjust this. But in the meantime, he's writing these beautiful hymns. When you think about a song like this or any Christmas song, What do you think like sparks creativity the most when you're trying to write something that is based on something like the nativity story? Like, when do you think it really struck him? Like, oh, I'm going to write a song about this piece right now.
Well, it said he wrote it when he was like really sad.
He wrote it right? When he was really sad and sick, but maybe he wrote it and maybe that season just inspired it because he was sick in the 1830s and he wrote the song in 1865. So very likely he's sitting at his desk one day. He's like, I'm going to hammer this out.
I mean, Michael and I talk about this all the time about how like the, I don't know. You could probably put this better and you'll probably know where I'm talking. And the moment you do, please take over because I trust your articulation more. But how when you are quote unquote going through it or when there's a need in your life, that's when you were alluding to when is it that he probably felt this like, I need to write this song about Christ. Like at your lowest moment when you're like, all right, I need help. That's, you know, I don't know. I feel like we talk. Do I take it over? I feel like.
Yeah. No, I do think like, when you're in your deepest moment of need, that is where there's just a deep level of authenticity. You're very vulnerable in that space. And so, in that place can come some of the most creative and heartfelt, forms of creativity is when you're in a deep place of need.
Yeah. I like to think of him not necessarily reflecting on his tragedy so much, but reflecting on like the monotony of day-to-day life. Yeah. I think to me,
that's an insurance agent.
Yeah. That's more compelling than, you know, tragedy breeds a lot of really great art as we know, but like monotony, we rarely talk about how typical life generally is, you know. Most days are just days, right? And this guy probably in the midst of a day that was just a day decided to write something that meant a lot to him. And I think that's a really interesting idea. Like inspiration can always strike. And if you are trying to break out of your monotony in order to be creative or in order to experience God, like maybe you should actually lean in to the monotony. Mm. Michael, from your spiritual formation practice standpoint, like do people ever come in and they're just like, I thank God for the boring, I thank God for just the normal day-to-day of my life? Or do you find people generally want to break out and they think they'll find God once they break out of that?
I think that most people really do not want to be living in the boring in our culture. I think that is something that's bred into us is avoid monotony, avoid boring, always fill your space and time and energy with things that will entertain and things that will keep your brain going. But I have found that I think the more that people press into the monotony and find, just push past the fear of not having something fill your brain waves and actually like just sit, the more that they find joy in that, the more that they find peace there, the more that they find God there.
Yeah, because those are your experiences 9 times out of 10, right? Like, and if you're trying to always find God in that 10th experience that's big and great and wonderful, you're going to miss out on all the other 9 ways that you can experience him. And that's kind of the thesis of a book I read a couple years ago. It's called Liturgy of the Ordinary, Sacred Practices in Everyday Life by Tish Harrison Warren. Great book, really recommend it. The cover is like a PB&J. Which is like to indicate like, you know, it's just kind of normal.
It's just normal.
Normal life. And so that, yeah, I like that a lot. JP, from a musical perspective, what's happening in this song? What can you tell us about it that maybe a layman like me, I hear it, I'm like, oh, that's pretty. But you're like, oh no, he's really trying to do something. Or the, you know, Green Sleeves is this complex song and it's trying to do this with the melody. Anything like that you can add?
Yes. And the other thing I want to say is this song inspired my, because asking any, I feel like maybe all of us are the same way. If you ask any of us like what our favorite song is, it's very day season dependent.
Totally.
So like, today it's this song, tomorrow it's this song, today it's this artist. So hearing this song informed and sparked my memory of what I alluded to at the beginning of my favorite song is this classical piece that I played with my family way back in the day. Hymn harmony is very different from like Hillsong harmony.
Right.
Right. It's like, you're not going to find a song that does this kind of like really, really tonic minor movement where it goes, you know, I don't know how many people I'm going to lose, but like, you know, the 3 to the 6th movement where it just like really tonicizes that minor chord. Cause in Hillsong songs, you go to the 6th all the time, but it doesn't make it minor. It's like that like dominant sound that like leads to yes. like, oh, super, super minor, which they just, which I know it's such a, like a classical thing to do, which I guess we kind of lost in, or just doesn't make sense in today's music.
Yeah. I want to ask about that. It seems like these hymns, like the way that you just kind of described that as a layman, I translate that as like, they were not uncomfortable making it a little bit weird. Why do you think we don't do that? Why do you think like a Hillsong song wouldn't do what this melody is doing?
There's, and this is, I had a music history teacher at Berkeley that was probably one of my favorite classes. And it was like the one that I probably was awake for the most. he spoke about, I wish I remembered his name, but he spoke about how in the history of music and as adjacent to that and very, very close to that Christian music, because a lot of music was written for the church,
right?
Like going back, or like, you know, musicians were commissioned to write music for the church. There was always a kind of a friction between what the person in charge wanted and what the composer wanted. Because, I mean, even as far back as Gregorian chant, you know, they wanted, the limitations were like, you can only use these words, right? Hmm. Because they wanted it to be able to have like sung by the congregation. And that's a really important thing. Like if it's something that's really complicated and through composed and beautiful, but nobody in the congregation can get involved or understand what's happening, that kind of puts a dent in the worship experience, if that's what is right. being like going for, I guess, if that's what's like the target. And I guess I'll say that maybe what we have today as modern worship music is kind of the other end of that like cycle of, we're back to, you know, things that, and this is not to speak on generalizing everything, but things that are easy to sing, refrains that are understandable, that bring people together and that kind of have a message that is very uplifting and people all together in a room can sing and relate to. And I think that's really important. But also, I think, you know, this, you know, composers of songs that were like, okay, I really want to make this moody piece with a beautiful melody, like, you know, ebbing chords, like all that stuff. That was the other side of right. that, of that thing, I guess.
That's a really interesting answer. And so, Michael, the contemporary version of that is like JP said, like the person in charge versus the composer. So I think that you'd be like the person in charge here. And so when you think about the message of what child is this, of like, man, this is such a monumental thing, this is human history changing. If you're in charge in writing a song like this, would you choose this type of melody or would you have chosen something different?
I mean, I love this song and I love how it's composed. It's rare that you see a song that includes the 2 minor and the 3 minor and the 6. It's rare that you see all of those included in a modern worship song. And it's not a modern worship song, but it's just rare that you see it even those done the way that we normally sing songs, right? So the fact that there, this still has a place in the church and can be sung, and it kind of brings us into this moody feeling that we don't normally get to experience in modern worship, I think is really great. So I am glad that this song exists. At the same time, it would be rare that I would find myself writing this.
Or even playing it. Like, does this song, do you think about playing this song during Christmas time at all?
I haven't, but at least not in the last couple years, but I would.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Yeah, it's a great song. I think it's like the, obviously Away in a Manger has been a little controversial, but I think it's a little bit of like the counter of that, of like, that's a lullaby. That's kind of to guide somebody into thinking and understanding what's happening versus this of like having you almost question a little bit like, oh, what does this mean to me? And I think that's what the funny connective tissue that this song would have with like, If We Make It Through December by Merle Haggard, of like, Christmas is a really relatable time. I mean, even if you're not a Christian, Michael, like you were saying, like there are trees and there's jingle bells and there's this and there's that. But like, as Christians, like we find ourselves really thinking about Jesus's birth, but also Jesus's life, like his birth catalyzed his life, obviously, like it does with all of us. And we have to think, what does that mean for us? What does that mean for me? And I think Christmas is very rarely a time where we are contemplative and we're like, oh, this is such a spiritual thing for me. Again, it's If We Make It Through December, you know, I'll be happy. But this song really calls you to ponder and to consider just how monumental this is for you as a Christian, which I think is really, really beautiful.
I think one of the theological perspectives that we that worship is so great at helping us see is what we call the transcendent and the immanent. Mm-hmm. And the idea being that God is transcendent. He's beyond time and space. He's huge. He's amazing. He's wonderful. He's glorious. And Jesus is all of those things. And yet the immanent, he is with us. He is human. He is God. He is God with humanity and made human. And so this idea, he's present. And I think what this song does almost, I'm wondering if this may do it the best, because Christmas is that story. It's that story of the Word made flesh. It's that story of the God of the heavens, the creator of the universe, the one who made you, the one who formed you, who knew you, before all time and space, coming to be with you and being not just with you, to be one of you. making himself nothing, taking on the form of a human, right? Yeah. I mean, this is a huge, huge dichotomy. It's the greatest dichotomy that ever was.
Well, yeah. And so let's think about the dichotomy of something like Christmas music, where we have Joy to the World, which is a expressive big piece, ode to joy, right? And it's funny because it's even that song even takes a classical piece and recontextualizes it just like this one does with Greensleeves. But the dichotomy of the incarnation holds both, right? Of the joy and the majesty of it, but also like the what does this actually mean for me? And I think that that's the beauty of Christmas music, right? It exists on a spectrum where you can look at a song like this and say, oh, there are some really deep spiritual things for maybe the type of season that I'm in, the type of holiday season that I'm having. It might not be good. It might be hard. It might be challenging. You might be going through something. Thus, a song like this really speaks to you, whereas Joy to the World maybe speaks to you because you're having a really good holiday season. And so I that's why I like this song a lot too. I think this is criminally underrated. Would you guys agree with that?
I get why they put this in the book.
Yeah.
That first book. Yep. It's, I guess I don't know. I didn't know what about it made it so special, but your take, not take, but what you spoke on about the immanent versus the transcendent. Mm-hmm. I guess there's, for me as just a person who listens to music first, lyrics later, but even something like this, like you're put in that moment, you're in that place, you're in that, you know, barn, manger, whatever you want to call it. Like, I don't know. It's, yeah, Ode to Joy, Joy of the Word. It's like, yay, we're having a good time, you know. But this is like, here's where it happened.
Yeah, yeah. That's really, really well put. Like, here's where it happened. It puts you in that space of like, oh my gosh, I'm experiencing this. And I think if you were a shepherd or one of the wise men, I guess you would be questioning this. Yeah. Like, I'm thinking of Luke 2 when the shepherds come, they tell Mary everything. I'm sure there were a lot of questions. I'm sure there were a lot of questions about what exactly happened, what is going on. And we very rarely will sit in the question of Christmas. And I think that's what's beautiful. And that's super funny that, I mean, I didn't even plan this, but like that game we played of Christmas songs, like the connective tissue is like that Christmas feeling, you know? And this song has that.
And this makes it feel closer in a different way.
Yep. Yeah. That's good. I love that. Really, really good. Do you guys have any final thoughts on our Christmas hymn here? I almost said Away in a Manger again.
I think
what child is this?
I think that if you haven't looked through the lyrics of this song, you should go do that. Because this song, it's lyrically very, very, very rich. I mean, words like come peasant king. You know, like that idea of Christ being both a peasant and yet the king. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, a dichotomy. It's like I spoke to before, but I just, I think it encapsulates what we as Christians want to do, which is enthrone God while also love him and be loved by him.
Enthrone God and also recognize how close he is to us.
Yes.
Right. That's super special. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, JP, thanks so much for coming out, man. This was an honor. I enjoyed geeking out with you for a very long time about music and all things related to this song.
Thank you guys for having me.
What a treat. And we will hopefully see you next Christmas and every single Christmas after that.